Okay, I got Finian Cunningham on the line, and Finian is a writer for RT and Sputnik, and he used to write Press TV and Global. He used to write a whole bunch of different places. I mean, everybody who's read op-ed or anything else will see his name. He's all over the web. And Finian is based in East Africa, and he's an old friend of mine, and he's a friend of the show. And hi, Finian, how you doing?
Okay, Tim. Thanks for having me on your wonderful show again, and greetings to all your listeners wherever they may be. You know, yeah, keeping good, Tim. Keeping good.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Did you hear that our former president H.W. Bush died? They call him Poppy. He died, and everybody just was all a Twitter about his death, and everybody's saying what a wonderful guy he was and everything, but. That's not how I remember it.
Okay, well, you know, the old saying that you don't speak ill of the dead and all that stuff, but I think that's actually a bit misplaced, because you should speak ill of people who have had a very horrible legacy, and a criminal legacy at that. I mean, you know, we shouldn't be deterred from speaking the truth and assessing people as they really were. And George H.W. Bush, like, man, I mean, what a legacy, you know, from the Gulf War back in 1991, before that, the attack on Panama, which killed, like, you know, maybe 5,000 people at least, if not more. What else? You had Somalia, invaded Somalia, called it Restore Hope, and he said it was the kick the Vietnam syndrome. I mean, the guy was a warmonger, like most of the presidents since the Second World War. In the last 8 decades, he was a warmonger and a criminal, and I don't make any apology for saying that. But looking at the U.S. media in the last week, I mean, especially the likes of CNN, I mean, it was absolutely nauseating. All this eulogizing and fawning over this guy as if he was some saint. And but I can understand where they're coming from, because they want to use him as some kind of counterpoint to the Trump president, and you know they're trying to make out these people like John McCain and George H.W. Bush some sort of paragons of American political virtue as a way of undermining Trump. So I can see where they're coming from, but it's an absolute disservice to the truth and the real record. I mean. I'll leave it there for a moment, Tim. Let you come in there.
All right. He just wasn't my cup of tea. I mean, during the first Gulf War, I mean, he had the, you know, that was, I guess that was the first time that he clamped down on the Vietnam syndrome of reporters reporting the truth about the war, because that's, you know, he said that's what made us lose the Vietnam War was, you know, they were fomenting, discord in the United States. So he made sure that the mainstream media was right on board with all this. And his intervention in, you know, the Iran-Contras, all that stuff was going on while he was vice president and head of the CIA. And, you know, everybody forgets about that. They say, oh, Putin, he used to be in the KGB. Well, Bush was the head of the CIA.
It's funny the double standard there indeed, I was watching a link to the Democracy Now! Program with Amy Goodman, and sometimes Miss Goodman doesn't always deliver for me, but I thought she did a good program on George H.W. Bush and during the week, and just pointing out that, you know, this whole Gulf War, this first Gulf War in 1991, and then his son George W. Bush, of course, did Gulf War II. But the Gulf Wars were a complete fabrication, a complete concoction of propaganda. And George Bush Sr. very much, you know, his administration created a pretext to go to war against Iraq's Saddam Hussein, just like his son did. And, you know, so if you kind of look at the spurious foundations of why they go to war, then it's an illegal war, and they're war criminals, and thousands of people were killed. But in Bush Sr.'s kind of a case, there was the whole notorious incident of the Kuwaiti lady who was connected to this Kuwaiti royal family giving a very false testimony about Iraqi soldiers killing babies in hospitals in Kuwait when they were kind of occupied, they invaded Kuwait. And this whole thing sold the whole cause for war. Bush senior's administration went to war, but it was a complete load of, fiction that it was war propaganda. So the whole Iraqi war, first Gulf War and the second Gulf War, based on alleged weapons of mass destruction. And in two cases, we had major wars, major, death tolls, and yet father and son are let off like as if they're just school teachers. When you had George W. Bush during the week crying his eyes out in some church in Texas about a great and noble father. I mean, what utter nauseating bullshit. And this, but the thing is, Tim, it shows you how insidious the mainstream media are, and that they try to normalize and sanitize completely heinous crimes and heinous people who are responsible for these crimes, like George Senior Bush and his fucking, sorry to
That's
use
okay.
the expression, but his son, and they're all of a sudden reinvented as some kind of paragons of virtue and democratic value. I mean, it's absolutely nauseating, that this mainstream media, orgy of, kind of like sentimentality all week. It was just absolutely nauseating, But anyway, I'm sorry, I'm going off a wee bit.
No, that's okay. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of when they made Rommel commit suicide in World War II, and then after they made him commit suicide, they had this lavish state funeral for him, calling him a hero of the Reich and all of that. I mean, it's the same thing. It's all government propaganda.
I can, it's just disgusting. But I bet you most of the ordinary American citizens just feel the same exactly as us, Tim. I mean, I think everybody's got sick of this mainstream kind of propaganda bullshit and mind control week after week. I mean, whenever the facts just completely slam you in the face, like John McCain and then this guy, George H.W. Bush. And as I say, like, they don't, the old saying is, don't speak ill of the dead. Well, if he was an ordinary 5'8 sort of guy or woman, yeah, I wouldn't speak ill of them. But these are fucking criminals. These are war criminals that should have actually seen justice in their day, So, I mean, just because they die, why should we stop holding them to account? I mean, as long as if I'm saying anything slanderous, these are factual things that we're saying, you can put the to the test of facts, and you will come up with the conclusion that George H.W. Bush was an untried, unprosecuted war criminal, and he certainly was, and the facts are there. So I'm not going to keep quiet because of this sort of precept that we don't talk ill of the dead whenever the dead involved are actually, heinous criminal people, and not puppy Bush like that the Western mainstream media try to normalize,
Yeah, and it's like we didn't stop talking bad about Hitler. I mean, just
Exactly.
'cause
Yeah.
he's dead.
Can you imagine, like, Hitler popped his clogs and then they say, oh, well, you can't speak ill of the dead. Okay, it's a bit of a different sort of like scale, but it's on the same. It's in the same category, different scale. But the thing about George H.W. Bush is he really had a very shadowy history going back to the time of John F. Kennedy. I mean, a lot of really credible researchers into the JFK assassination would actually place the Bush H.W. George H.W. Bush in Dallas on the day of the November 22nd, 1963 assassination of John F.K. Now, Bush's position then may not have been like an executor of the actual assassination, but he, from researchers involved, very credible research, he was a player. He was in the day in Dallas on that day as a member of the CIA. And there's actually photographs of somebody who looks like George H.W. Bush outside the Dallas police station on the afternoon. You know, I believe from what I've read, I believe he was a player in that whole assassination scenario. And then he later became the CIA chief in the mid-1970s. And I'm going to let you come in, Tim. I'm going to let you come in now because I don't want to talk too much, just ranting and raving. I'm going to let you come in, but I want to follow that up about his role as this chief of the CIA in 1976-77 and how that actually relates to today's conduct of the Saudi regime. But I will let you come in and give your perspective on things for a while.
I saw a picture of the guy that supposedly looked like Bush outside the police station, and they took a cutout, and he was wearing the same hat, the same jacket, the same everything, cut the same way, everything. And Bush, meanwhile, states that he was never there. But, hey, come on, photographs don't lie. I mean, it was him or it was an exact double, it was a clone.
He's on record of saying that he didn't remember where he was on the day of the JFK assassination. And, the guy was only a 4 or 5 month old baby, so I've got an alibi, you know.
I remember exactly where I was when Kennedy got shot.
Most people, I mean, any big event like that, like 9/11 or, any major event, I mean, you know where you were, but he claims he never remembered. But anyway, Tim, I've seen the photographs of him, this person that looks like him outside the girls' places, and I'm telling you, it's either him or his twin, unknown twin,
the CIA, the covert operations that went on, especially during Grenada and all of that stuff, and Honduras, all of that, that was all under Bush's purview. And, we're still doing it. And then we wonder why we got thousands of Hondurans trying to get back into the United States because their country is in anarchy.
Yeah, well said, Tim. Yeah, exactly. There's a good book by a guy called Russ Baker. I don't know if you come across it, Tim, but Russ Baker, R-U-S-S, Baker, B-A-K-E-R. He did a book called The Bush Family of Secrets, the Bush Dynasty. And he goes into the Bush family, like Prescott Bush, the father of George H.W. Bush, the grandfather of George W. Bush, and how he very much collaborated with the Nazis through supplying them with Wall Street finance. The guy was should have been hung for treason, from what I made out. I mean, he was involved with the Nazi regime, financing them and all that. And then you George H.W. Bush, the 94-year-old 41st president, who just passed away. But the whole family is very much embroiled in shady dealings, from helping the Nazis to conducting illegal wars and killing tens of thousands of people, and in George W. Bush's case, over 1 million people in Iraq. Tim, look, if I might just sort of try to pursue the point that I want to make. You see, last week, what really got me, what really totally bamboozled me, left me gobsmacked, was that you had two big stories in the U.S. media last week. George H.W. Bush's state funeral, in which there was an orgy of sentimentality and beatification, and this guy was just an absolute fucking saint. And then you had the other story, which was the Senate going after the Saudis for violations, like murder of a journalist called Jamal Khashoggi, the Yemen war, the blockade of Qatar. So there were two stories, but they were actually really, really connected by the person of George H.W. Bush. But yet you're looking at CNN and the rest of the mainstream media bullshit, you would never have had an inkling that there was actually any bridge between those two stories. But there is, because George H.W. Bush, during the 70s as head of the CIA, he very much cultivated the Saudis as the paymasters for covert CIA operations around the world. Because getting back to JFK and his alleged involvement in that, when they were having all these congressional investigations during the 70s, like the Church Committee and the House, the House of Assassinations probe or something like that, and there was a couple of congressional probes into the whole CIA clandestine dirty operations around the world, from knocking off the South Vietnamese leader, the guy in Africa, Patrice Lumumba, and the dirty tricks against Fidel Castro in Cuba, and also the assassination of John F. Kennedy in 1963. Now, there was this massive hate brought to bear on the CIA during the 70s because of these congressional probes. And as a way to avert the scrutiny and the public oversight into the CIA's kind of dirty tricks budget, Bush Sr. very much cultivated the Saudis to be the bankrollers, the financiers of the CIA operation, so that it would obviate the Congress and the American public having an oversight into the CIA's operations. So when you look at the Saudi operations today and how they mass murder people in Yemen and they can chop up a journalist in Istanbul, it gets back to the way George H.W. Bush liaised with these despots in Saudi Arabia for their, you know, financial backing of CIA dirty operations, you know. So last week, I mean, there was two stories that were totally connected: Bush's passing, Bush himself, his life, and the Saudis, you know, the Senate going after the Saudis. But yet, in the Western media and the US media, you would never have any inkling that the two things were actually so intimately connected.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, everybody glosses. The American public attention span is minuscule, you know, and that's how they get away with this stuff, because they got this constant news cycle. Every 24 hours, every 18 hours, 5 hours, they come out with a different story. So it just wipes everybody's memory about what really happened. And a lot of these young people, they don't realize what's been going on in this country for the last 50 years, more than that. And, you know, this is how they get away with all this. But the thing is people aren't listening that much to CNN or MSNBC or Fox or any of these. You know, they're getting their headlines from Democracy Now! and YouTube and all sorts of the Humanist Report and Kyle Kulinski and all these people, because they can't stand it anymore. And this is why the millennials are like, they're so politically savvy, because they don't listen to all this kind of propaganda that we constantly fed through the mainstream media.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I think you're right, Tim. You know, and I think the figures show it. Like their audiences and their subscribers are plummeting. You know, because people just don't have any respect anymore for these new so-called news channels, which are not news channels, they're the propaganda channels. I mean, you know, let's be the specific thing about John McCain, the whitewashing of that war criminal and George H.W. Bush. I mean, this is outrageous whitewashing of people's records, and it's not a case of like speaking ill of the dead, it's a case of like really holding these kind of people to account in a factual way, and the media completely whitewash and turn it into a kind of a a sickening orgy of sentimentality. So ordinary people who have a little bit of grasp on reality and have done a little bit of research would find it absolutely nauseating when they look and turn on the likes of CNN and watch this kind of like grotesque beatification of a fucking war criminal. And I'm sorry to use the expletive again, but it's so frustrating and so infuriating, I have to say it. Like, you know, this is disgusting, the way people who have committed war crimes killed tens of thousands of people, and yet you're supposed to look at a coffin being borne down the street of some, you know, main street in Texas or whatever it is, and what, cry? And salute? It's an insult to your intelligence, and I think a lot of people are totally getting it, you know, and they just don't buy into it. And that's why this mainstream media, they're gone, like they're finished. I mean, you know, the only people who would tune into CNN is a masochist or somebody who wants a good laugh. Like,
yeah, you know, it all goes to, you know, your point is exactly made when you understand that the United States has pulled out of the International Criminal Court. Yeah, because these people can't be charged for war crimes because we don't belong to the International Criminal Court. We're the ones that helped set it up after World War II, and yet we don't belong to it anymore because half our leaders would be thrown in jail for war crimes.
Yeah, it's sort of a shame. I mean, I don't think there's any president, I really don't think, since the Second World War, since FDR, I don't think there's any American president who would actually escape a war crimes prosecution. I mean, even Jimmy Carter, because he was relatively good, and he's come out in his later years being quite benign, and I kind of respect his statements on things like North Korea and, you know, negotiation for peace. And, you know, the guy is, you know, he's kind of, how would you say, he's reconciled a wee bit. But I mean, even during his day, relatively good in all that he was. But I mean, I think he did some dirty, dirty operations in Central America supporting the El Salvador regime, you know, in the early 1980s or 1979. No, sorry, that was Rose, but in the mid-70s, anyway. I mean, he was involved in supporting the Salvadorian death squad regime there. So, I mean, he's relatively good. Jimmy Carter, but that's only one guy out of, what, 10, 11 presidents? I mean, they're all war criminals, you know.
Even Eisenhower, I mean, you know, after World War II, do you know how many German soldiers died? They left them in an open field. I mean, with no food, you know, hardly any water, no toilet facilities, and out in the freezing cold. I mean, you know, that was a war crime right there. I mean,
yeah.
even well, though they were the enemy, I mean, you don't treat prisoners of war like that, you know, and yet you never hear anything about that in the American press.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Eisenhower was very much involved in the mass murder of in the Korean War. So I mean, yeah, I mean, they're all potentially prosecutable for war crimes. They're all war criminals, and I don't mean to sound derogatory to American politics, but really, that's a measure of how bad things are whenever every one of the leaders since the Second World War could be prosecuted for war crimes or crimes against humanity. But this guy, George H.W. Bush, I mean, yeah, I mean, he his legacy is, you know, just appalling, you know, and, you know, like, I mean, the start of that Gulf War business, and that carried on then through sanctions during the Clinton administration, and then his son took it up again in 2003 with an even bigger war operation. And I mean, what we're talking about really a continuum of war since George H.W. Bush's time, which he initiated. And as I say, Tim, like, I'm trying to get the point that across that, I mean, he very much as far as I can tell, as far as I've researched that, no, I could be totally, I could be wrong. I mean, I might not have got it all right, but I'm quite confident to say this to your listeners, that Bush Senior very much co-opted the Saudis as the bankers of the CIA dirty tricks operations around the world and other clandestine American operations around the world. Because during the 70s, with the Church Committee, the Frank Church, the Senator, and various other, the House on Assassinations, there was a House of Representatives committee. I just can't remember the exact, the HS. Oh, sorry, I just can't remember the exact
That's okay.
formal name of it. But anyway, there was a couple of congressional committees, and they really were scrutinizing the CIA, largely because of the JFK assassination and other assassinations around the world. And the CIA were under immense pressure because of their criminal conduct. And so to get out of, to put it into the black, a black budget, Bush Senior, as the head of the CIA, got the Saudis to be the bankrollers for the CIA operations, because the public, there was too much public scrutiny on the CIA operations from the mid-70s onwards. So the Saudis came in from the 70s, the mid-70s onwards, as being the bankers, the bankrollers for America, well, Washington's dirty tricks, the CIA's dirty wars, dirty tricks, assassinations, and all the rest of it. Now, the really, to, just let me, just hold on there, let me just fill this out. Now, this comes to full demonstration during the war in Syria, which is still going on, although it's petered out. But for the last 8 years, as your listeners know, Syria has been subjected to a covert regime change war by the Americans, well, Washington, by the British, and by the French. They organized this, regime change operation against Bashar al-Assad, because he's an ally of Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah. They wanted rid of this guy, and they wanted rid of him for years, even before the beginning of the war in 2011. Now, the Americans and the British and the French provided the logistics, the tactics, the raison d'être, the whole plan. But it was the Saudis who funded it. They funded these jihadi terrorists. They supplied, they bought the weapons for them. But that's an exemplar, that's a demonstration of the Bush kind of arrangement. You get the Saudis to bankroll what the CIA want to do. And the CIA wanted to get rid of Bashar al-Assad. They have got the planning, the logistics, blah, blah, blah. And the Saudis come in then with the dough to finance all this. And that is an exact model of what Bush created in the mid-70s to obviate American public scrutiny of what the CIA were doing around the world. So there is a really contemporary example of the CIA-Saudi relationship that Bush very much innovated from the 70s. So, that's what really infuriates me when I'm looking at all this eulogizing over George H.W. Bush last week in the media, and probably in the next week or so. And yet, the guy was a complete war criminal.
Yeah, and the other thing about that is everybody says, oh yeah, well, Bashar al-Assad was never that bad. During the Iraq War, he took in hundreds of thousands of refugees, so much where he got a medal from the UN. He took in Sunnis, he took in Shia, he took in Christians, he took in everybody. And not only did he take them in, but he gave them food and he gave them jobs. So and the UN helped finance his refugee program, and then gave him a medal for it. And then 5 years later, we're calling him out, and it all boils down to money. And as far as the Saudis are concerned, the thing was is we wanted to build a gas pipeline from Saudi Arabia under Syria that went to Europe, And the you know the Bashar al-Assad didn't want that because he was allied with the Russians and he wanted it to go in another direction under you know, and it was all about money, it was all about oil, and you know that's what the whole thing was, and it's always about money, and if you ever trail any almost any war, including the Second World War, the First World War, and all the other wars in between. Yeah, and the wars afterwards, it's all down to money. It's always about money. And that's what people don't seem to understand.
No, as a very noble American soldier, Smedley Butler, famously said, like, it's just a racket. War is a racket. It's a criminal enterprise to support capitalist industries. And Smedley Butler had it so beautifully, succinctly put in the 1930s when he finally realized himself just what a henchman he was for Wall Street. And he very nobly confessed and put it out in a very, very stark way as to what was the nature of war. It's just a capitalist racket. So, just to make your point, to emphasize your point, Tim, you know.
Yeah, and so, you know, he said that he was a general for United Fruit, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and then it's the same thing we did in the Philippines. It's the same thing we did in Central America. It's the same thing we did. You know, that's why everybody wanted to get into the First World War. I mean, and meanwhile. And then you talk about Bush, you talk about his father, you're talking about H.W. Bush's father, and he was a senator. He was also in Harriman Brothers, who, like you said, they were financing the Nazis. And it was the government that turned around and were going to press charges against them unless they stopped financing the Nazis.
I would love to see among these CNN, you know, panels that are completely, trying to beatify George H.W. Bush, if somehow some guy could come in and just say, hey, what about Prescott Bush that was financing the Nazis? I mean, just to blow their minds, you know, but it would be just lovely to see, you know, but you'd never get that kind of injection of reality. It's just such a falsification of people's biographies and a falsification of history, and it's just nauseating, you know. And no wonder people are so in the mood to revolt, you know, because they've just had enough of the lies, you know, the fake news, the fake propaganda. And I know Trump is very much coined that, or how do you say, use that phrase, fake news, but he's actually right on that score. I mean, even though I don't have much respect for him, he's right. He's right there. You're talking about from the New York Times, the Washington Post, the CNN, NBC, and BBC, and France 24. They're all just fake news.
And you could go all the way back to World War II when Henry Ford had a truck factory in Germany, and they were producing trucks for the Nazi army, and they still had their truck factory going all the way up until 1943, and then when the Allies bombed that truck factory, because that's where they were getting all their trucks to transport their soldiers and everything, then after we bombed that truck factory, we had to pay Ford Motor Company reparations for destroying their factory in Germany. I mean, how wacky is that?
I heard that, that's such a good absurd one, like, you know. I heard about that, but that was a good thing to remember, to remind, you know. But, it's just terrible, you know. But, What do you want to move on to?
Well, whatever, you talk about those French protests. What's going on with that? I am not up to speed on that.
Well, Well, I mean, I've only been looking at the news, so just what I can glean from the news, so I'm not actually there, so don't let your listeners be of the illusion that I'm sort of in France or anything, I know firsthand, but just from what I can tell from the news, and the mainstream news at that, so you have to read between the lines and glean what you can. But in general, Tim, I think it's bloody great. I mean, I have to admire the French public for getting out there en masse and challenging the status quo. I mean, this is what we need to do all around the world. I mean, we're all being exploited and hammered by warmongers and oligarchs who, just rig the system, rig the budgets, rig the fiscal, arrangements so that we all get hammered for taxes and, expenses, and the rich are just getting away with. Broad daylight, theft. I mean, like Macron, this Emmanuel Macron, this French president, who I just always saw as a charlatan, a complete charlatan. But he got elected there, when was it, about a year ago or so, more than a year ago. And then, for change and all this stuff, like all this kind of bullshit that, like Obama came out with, hope and change, and change the system, all this bollocks. And like, he just turned out to be another puppet for the oligarchy. I mean, in the last few months, he did away with, tax on the wealth, the very, very wealthy, which will, with billions of dollars worth, or euros worth, and that will have to be found through taxing the ordinary working majority of people. And that's what they're up in revolt about. I mean, they're getting taxes slammed on their fuel, their diesel and their petrol and various other things, while the very wealthy, the 1% in French society, are getting tax breaks. And they just had enough of it. I mean, I can totally sympathize with them, and totally support their anger and their revolt, and they're just taking to the streets, blocking everything. And I just love it. I mean, I just think there should be more of that, not just in France, but right across the whole capitalist Western world. I mean, that's what the Americans and the British and the Irish and, you name it, we should be all doing this, is getting out there and demanding some kind of accountability for the money that's siphoned off the majority of people into the hands of the very, very wealthy minority, and into wars and such things like that, such, stupid, kind of wasteful, destructive, horrible, criminal, activities in war. We should be out there, and I think the French are really giving a good example. I mean, I have to take my hat off to them and from a distance support them in solidarity. I mean, what they're doing is great. That's what, and the thing is that they're really, the beautiful thing about it is actually achieving the result. I mean, your man Macron has had to climb down from his, outrageous kind of like tax hike, extortion of the ordinary people. He's had to cancel that plan to kind of put taxes on their, their livelihoods. And he's backing down. I mean, I think that what's going on in France is a very, very, it's kind of like a landmark situation. It's historic. I mean, we've got a government in France that is really, really on the ropes here. They're in serious danger of being taken down by a popular revolt. And if that can happen in France, it can happen anywhere. And I think that's what's really, really alarming the Western governments, well, the oligarchic puppets around the world. They're really concerned, because this thing could be Tim, like a kind of a vanguard, or a kind of
Precursor, yeah.
To draw a lot more revolts around the world. And I think that's what's really fascinating about this situation. And I don't mean that in a kind of a, you know, in a glad sort of way that, oh, you know, let's just have a revolution and, you know, screw the system. I mean, I think it's actually a very significant moment what's going on in France, because if this thing takes off, it spreads to other parts of Europe, spreads to the United States, spreads anywhere where there's oppression of the mass of people through oligarchic exploitation, you know, through the siphoning of money from the vast majority of people to an elite. This is very inspirational and very significant as what could happen. I mean, I think Trump tapped into a groundswell of resentment among ordinary people. But he, in my view, Tim, he sold it out. He didn't, he, well, maybe that's not a surprise because he is a fucking oligarch himself. But you know, he tapped into a really huge reservoir of resentment and ill feeling and legitimate feelings of, you know, injustice and unfairness and, you know, all the rest of it. Now, he tapped into it and got a lot of votes, but he's ready for the, in my view, he's ready for the, you know, he's part of the elite that needs to be taken down, as Macron is in France and other places. So, you know, I think there's potentially a groundswell of ordinary people, the majority of people, working people all around the world that are ready for a revolution,
well,
an uprising. And this, what's going on in France will be sending, in my view, will be sending very, very, very alarming signals, you know, feelings through the whole oligarchic system, whether it's in the US or Britain or Ireland or wherever. You know, they're watching this. They will be watching this with great trepidation.
But right here in the United States, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez got elected. She's a barmaid in New York, and she got elected, and she beat this guy Crowley, who was a well-entrenched Democrat. Who was well tied to all these corporate figures, and she beat him in the primary, and she went on to win a congressional seat. And her and this other lady, she's a Muslim woman, and I forget her name. They went to this orientation meeting that all new congressmen have to go to, and she and this other lady started tweeting out that they're sitting here in this orientation that was mandatory, and they had five CEOs from major corporations, including Goldman Sachs, telling them that they're completely out of their league and they have to bend to the will of the corporate, you know, structure. And she started tweeting this out while the orientation was going on. And it just, you know, it shows the Goya here that, you know, people are really, you know, starting to hear what's really going on here. I mean, when you got Goldman Sachs, you know, the executive from Goldman Sachs sitting there telling you how to represent the people of the United States for the corporate interest, I mean, that's pretty telling. Yeah, so that got major airplay here in the United States.
Yeah, that's amazing, Tim. I didn't actually, that's news to me until you told me. Like, but in a way, it doesn't surprise me, you know. But you know, it's. I mean, we're just talking about democracy. It's nothing. It's something criminal. It's just about kind of establishing democratic rights that are fair. You know, crack at life, to have a good job, good wages, and good public services. I mean, that's how you repress the whole thing is. It just because we're calling for, you know, a bit of a life for everybody. You know, a decent life for the majority of people. That's sort of seen as kind of, you know, somehow, you know, an unacceptable demand. I mean, it's really that's how extremely repressed,
but
I think we are. Like,
if you judge the living standards of people, I mean, going way back in history to the Roman Empire, they say that the plebs had more creature comforts and less income inequality than the rich people in the Roman Empire, than the average worker in the United States has to the oligarchs. I mean, yeah, the plebs are better off than we are, and we're supposed to be the richest country in the world. Meanwhile, we're a nation of serfs. And this is what's happening in France, this is what's happening in the United States, this is what's happening all over the capitalist countries, that capitalism is in decline, and unless they come up with a better system, it's going to fall.
Yeah. I mean, it's but this guy, sorry, Tim, are you still hearing me?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Hello, Tim.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Hello, Tim.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. Sorry, Tim, you're just breaking up a wee bit there.
Yeah, well, it said poor connection before. Now it doesn't say it. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you, Tim. I'm getting that poor network connection sign too now, you know, on this end.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
We're 46 minutes in, so if you've got any closing thoughts here before we lose the connection altogether.
Not really, Tim. You know, I think we've said it all. You know, just great to hear you again. You know,
it's good to hear you too. And I'll be putting this up tonight, and I'll send you a link to the show. And we covered a lot in 48 minutes, you know?
Yeah. Try to take out the extremists, will you?
I can't take nothing out. It's going to go up. It's just the way we said it, you know?
Okay, Tim. Are you sure? Yeah, we're okay. Like,
yeah, it's fine. You know, the media down out here is a lot less restrictive than it used to be.
Yeah. Okay, Tim, I just don't want to get you banned from the airwaves, you know?
No, I won't. You won't. All right, yeah. Vinny, you take care of yourself, and, you know, you can read Vinny on RT and Sputnik and a whole bunch of different places, and, you know, I'll be trying to catch your articles, and send me a link every once in a while, Vinny.
Yeah. Okay, Tim, I sure will, like, and thanks very much. I think you repost some of my articles on Op-Ed News, which is a nice forum for thought-provoking debate. So I appreciate that, Tim. You know, and just to in case any of the listeners are interested to follow this up, the article of George H.W. Bush will be coming out of Strategic Culture Foundation in the next day or two, I hope. That's Strategic Culture Foundation. It's a Moscow-based online journal that it features a lot of Western writers, like, you know, American and British and different people. It's an international online journal. But, you know, just if anybody wanted to follow up on that, subject about George H.W. Bush and the CIA and the Saudi, involvement in American repression and dirty tricks around the world. You'll get more details on it in a forthcoming article out on Strategic Culture Foundation in the next day or two. But I know maybe if people aren't really aware of this, this might sound all a bit kind of unbelievable or outlandish, but it's based on good solid research, you know.
Okay, sure. Send me a link and I'll put the link inside the show if you do it before I put the show up. I'm gonna put the show up tonight, so you probably won't get done with it by then.
No. Go ahead, Tim. Don't worry about that. Like I'll send you a follow up link to it.
Okay.
Just to say, look, thanks very much for having me on your wonderful show, and you're the future of media and public discourse, you know, not the likes of CNN and the New York Times. I mean, that's, we're just kind of like, obsolete, really, and I really. So what you're doing is great.
Well, thanks. What you do is great too, you know, and that's why I republish on Op-Ed News and every place I can, you know.
Oh, thanks, Tim. So anyway, look, take care, Tim, and have a good weekend. Maybe talk to you next Saturday.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Yeah, okay, Tim. Talk to you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, Tim, good day. Bye-bye, bye-bye.
Okay, that was Finian Cunningham, and that was our interview for this Saturday, and it'll be on next Saturday, and I'll be putting this up on Blog Talk Radio soon, so watch for it. Okay, and if you hear it, you probably already watched for it. Okay, bye-bye.